All right. Hey, everybody. This is Mandy Speaks Up, and I'm Mandy. And today I'm super duper excited to have somebody that's very, just an amazing soul overall, but of course, somebody that is totally going to be sharing their journey today. And this is something that touches me deeply, but I also know that Heather is going to be the face for countless others that are out there that have publicly shared their story, will one day choose to share their story publicly. And so we definitely want to share her story here on today's topic. Is going to be Escaping the Potter's House, CFM Cult. It is such an incredible honor to have her here. So you may not know who Heather Wiley is, but I guarantee you at the end of this little chat discussion interview, you will definitely know who Heather Wiley is, okay? Because Heather Wiley escaped an abusive cult by the name of the Potter's House, CFM Cult, okay? CFM Cult stands for Christian Fellowship Church. Heather walked in at the age of 17 and would find herself entrapped for over a decade. Okay, so this particular cult was the Potter's House in Alice Springs, Australia. But of course, this cult is a worldwide cult. So all over. So we're going to go into Heather's story. This is the first time she's publicly sharing her story so bravely. So I definitely want to make sure that she knows and everybody else knows that this is a survivor. Like we're sitting at a survivor's table. Okay, So if you are here and you're a survivor of whatever it is that you feel you have survived, you're welcomed here. This is a table where we are going to be gentle. We are here to hear each other and validate each other. And so this is not a room for any words or statements that you may feel is not going to validate and not going to be gentle and not going to be comforted words. Like that's not accepted here. So we are here with the survivor. We've all survived many things. It doesn't matter if you have never been in a cult. Today, you're going to learn how somebody can fall into this belief that this place was a good place. It's going to help me. And then you walk away even more distressed than the way you walked in, okay? Mm-hmm. So we're going to go into this story, and Heather is going to take us on this journey. She's going to have the floor. She's going to go as deep as she wants. And so a viewer discretion is advised for the things that may pop up, that may be said. There might be some trigger warning. So I just want to state that before we go into Heather's story. So again, I want to welcome Heather Wiley. Thank you so much for joining me, and you can go ahead and share your story awesome. So bravely. I'm like so proud of you.
Thank you, Mandy. Thank you so much for having me and for doing what you're doing to help people on their journeys as well and by sharing your journey. So for me, also, I would just say real quick, I know we said the church is in Alice Springs, Australia, but I am American. So if the accent is throwing anyone off, that's why. I just happened to... When I was 17, my parents were in the military, and that was our next station that we got sent out to. It was located in Alice Springs. I grew up in a Christian church. It was a more balanced one, like to my perspective back then. Today, I would probably have a better perspective now. But I had fun. I was having a positive, good experience. All my friends went there. So in my mind, church was good. And in my mind, I was in a church that was really teaching you how to have a balanced perspective of the Bible, how to study history, how to study all the original words, all this stuff. So when I went to Alice Springs, I was wanting to look for another good church. And the context here, and I think this might be important because I feel like any traumatic situation, oftentimes this is the case. You're what I called it was a perfect storm scenario where I was 17. I was having the time of my life. I had a lot of great friends. Everything was good. And all of a sudden I got ripped out of my stability and where I had good things going on. And then I went to Alice Springs, which was another country. And even though Australia is freaking awesome, Alice Springs is a really, really tiny country town, literally in the middle of the outback, thousands and thousands of kilometers from the next nearest city. So they, being a country town, were, in my mind, kind of really far behind, like the trends and the things that I was used to. So like all of a sudden, the clothes I was wearing, I stuck out like a sore thumb. My accent, I stuck out like a sore thumb. I didn't have any friends. My parents decided, instead of to put me in 11th grade, which is what I should have, what they pulled me out of in the US when we moved there, decided that I could just do, take my GED, and then over there put me into like the local college to start taking like art classes and things. So I, on my own, decided to start going to church there. And the first church I went to, I don't even know how I found out about it, was the Potter's House. And I went, and the service was lively. The preaching was like, oh, wow, this is really good. These people are legit, you know. So I just started going. And also, everybody was so friendly. Everybody was so nice. They immediately invited me to different things. There was a local, the college radio station, had an open slot on Friday nights that people in the church would go do like a more youth oriented Christian radio station program. So I was like, oh, I'll go there and I'll, you know, meet more people. And there's sort of like parallel stories that would go on here with me. One is, that's where I met the guy I would end up marrying, from the church, by the way, was at this radio station thing. I was 17, and he was 30, or just about to turn 30. And I know I didn't know at the time, you know, where things were going to go. But basically, in my perspective, I was going to a really good church. They had Bible studies. They had programs. They had stuff going on. Everybody was super friendly. They would invite me to their house for dinner. They would invite me for, you know, for coffee. And it just seemed legit. And then on top of that, I had nobody, you know, and this was, and that's oftentimes, I think what happens is this ends up being, you know, everybody always wants community, and there's healthy places to find community and meet people, but this was not one of them. I found out, you know, later when I was starting to kind of like realize and break things down that this was an actual cult, was learning that one of the things cults do is they do love bombing. Narcissists will do this as well. And so then here comes the other part of the story. So the guy I ended up marrying, not only do I not realize I'm in a cult, I'm now being groomed by an older narcissist. He was 12 years older, I think. And I was 17.
So you got married at 17?
No, I met him, okay, but he was already paying attention to me, flirting with me, spending time with me, singling me out and stuff like that. They also did stuff called, you know, they also did outreach every Saturday. And I was like, oh, wow, this church is legit. They go outreaching every Saturday. Whoa. They do like skits out in public, stuff like that. So to my perspective, initially, I was like, wow, this is pretty amazing, pretty legit. Holy cow, these guys are the real deal. So I would go to outreach and things like that. What I didn't know was at this stage, I'm just experiencing it like a free person off the street. Mm-hmm. What happens is as you start attending more and more, the next layer starts to creep through, which is, you know, are you saved? Well, I was, because I was already a Christian. Are you baptized? Well, I was, because I was already baptized previously. Are you coming every Sunday? Well, I had nothing to do, so I was coming every Sunday. But then it's like, oh, well, there's service Sunday night. Why don't you come Sunday morning and Sunday night? So I was like, okay. And then it's like, oh, there's also midweek service on Wednesday. Why don't you come Wednesday night? So I was like, okay. And, you know, and they start what they call discipling you, which is a thing in regular churches. In regular churches, there's discipleship for people who want to serve and do more for God. And it's a little bit more regimented and more getting into things. So all this stuff I'd experienced before in a better context. So I, you know, as I was getting pulled in with more things in the Potter's house, that's where I still didn't quite realize, like, I was translating everything they were saying according to how it was at my previous church. And all this, you know, I kind of mentioned because I think a lot of these things, and I'll explain later how, but I think a lot of these things do actually can still play out in just regular everyday life. I think there are aspects of society that can sometimes be really imbalanced like that too, and can start. Anyway, I'll tie that together later. So I'm going to this church. I'm getting paid attention to by this guy. I'm going to the outreaches. People are reaching out to my family and having lunches and things with my mom and my sisters. So then my family starts going. But all the way it goes to the next level is, so this guy that's pursuing me, you know, I've got nothing else going on. I'm really young. I did turn 18. And I just, you know, I also grew up, you know, in the Christian church, you know, everybody gets Focus on the Family magazine. Everybody reads Focus on the Family books. And everything Focus on the Family constantly tells you to look for in a husband and a godly father and all this stuff. To me, this guy, you know, was everything on that list. Mm-hmm. And I even read this book that was like, and this is the worst, and I will just preface, this is the worst advice you could ever have. The book was literally, don't listen to your emotions. Emotions lie to you. And this is from Focus on the Family, from Dr. Dobson. Emotions lie to you. Yes, get married with both eyes open, but after marriage, keep one eye shut. I remember that was another thing that it said. And I was like, okay, so it's telling me, everything's telling me you need to be logical. You need to marry someone that ticks all these boxes. The church now that I'm in is also saying all this kind of stuff. So I'm just still kind of giving it to you from this early phase perspective that I was in at the time.
Right.
Because things really change later, and you start to understand other stuff. But so that's how I ended up getting swept in with this guy. Was, you know, I was like, oh, this is the right thing to do. This is a good husband. You know, he was a widower with two kids. And he was, to my perspective, really taking good care of his, you know, two kids. And I was like, oh, wow. So he's a good husband. He's a good father. He's dedicated at church all the time. So we ended up dating. And my family was dead set against it. But, you know, I was at this point, I think I was 19, whatever. I went ahead with it. All the pastor did say was like, oh, he maybe had a little bit of alarm bells about it and probably didn't really advise it, but that's all he said. I did also, because my parents were so dead set against it, they actually sent me back to America for 6 months. But here it was another, unfortunately, just created another perfect storm. I got sent to live with a cousin that they didn't realize she was in with. So I was in El Paso, which is a border city with Mexico. And she had actually was hiding out and trying to keep herself secret from the narcos in Mexico and Juarez, because this was in like 98. And anybody that's watched all the narco shows on Netflix knows the US came, killed some people. There caused this whole change in the narco establishment. It went from everything being fine and homeostasis, even though it's like stupid to be involved with that. Like everything was fine. But this changed everything. They killed off all the pawns in the previous drug lords organization. Tons of killings were going on. This is relevant, I promise you. All this stuff was going on. So my cousin fled that and was living in El Paso because it turns out that her husband was like a pawn in that organization and he got carjacked and murdered. So she fled with her daughter and she was now living with the husband's brother and they were still like things were shady. So she
didn't live- so you went from one like bad situation to another.
Yeah, she wouldn't let me use the phone. She wouldn't let me come back to the house after dark. She would lock all the doors and lock all the windows. This just weird stuff was going on. And my aunt and uncle that I was really close to lived in Juarez. So I ended up leaving to go stay with them. But at this point, all it did was it isolated me more. And just, I ended up only ever talking to this guy. So we ended up getting married. So he organized all the visas for me to come back to Australia. And I take responsibility. Like this was something I had to realize later. And I can, and I feel like that's a, probably one of the pivotal points in my healing process, which I can explain and get into. So went back to Australia, ended up marrying him. And,
so how old are you at this point?
I was 19. I turned 20 shortly thereafter. But I was 19 and he was now 30, 31, something like that. I can't remember. And then things took a whole nother turn because now I wasn't just any person going to the church. Mm-hmm. Now I was two things. One, I was the wife of a husband in the church. And, Two, I was now considered somebody for ministry. And I'll explain what that means. So number one, I was now the wife of a husband in the church. Only men have ministry in this organization. Only men can do anything. And except for the two things or maybe three things women can do. One is their job is to keep their husbands sexed up. So I quickly learned one of the rules was I was not allowed to be separated from my husband for more than 2 weeks because if you're apart for more than 2 weeks, he could fall into sin and fall into sexual sin. And that would be my fault for not being around to keep him sexed. And so then I find out this piece of news, which was huge. Because, you know, he'd promised me I could go home and visit my family every year. And Australia is really far. It takes like 3 days of travel just to get from America to Australia. And then another 3 days just, you know, the other way. And then I'm not seeing my family because now my parents have moved on. The military has now shipped them off to their next location. So now I'm isolated yet again in a different way. My family's gone. I'm now discovering that I'm not allowed to see my family because of this stupid rule. And number two, anything that could perhaps jeopardize your loyalty to the church starts being attacked and painted in a negative light. So my family was starting to... And this was mostly my ex. You know, this is something a narcissist will do as well. So one thing I kind of really realized was cults operate very much like narcissists. So it is a breeding ground, like a perfect place for narcissists to get what they want. But anyway, in the marriage, yeah, he started separating me from anyone who would potentially threaten the relationship with him or threaten my loyalty to the church. So that became my family. That became any friends I had made in town. There was a woman in the church who everybody hated and gossiped about and talked shit about because she was a minister's wife, like not the pastor, but she would vacillate. Sometimes she'd be really dedicated and she'd be really following all the rules and doing everything right, and sometimes she wouldn't. And when she's not, then everybody would like trash her. So then her daughter and I became best friends. And so then it was constantly like, sometimes I'd be able to hang out with her, but almost all the time I was being separated from being able to hang out with her. Both by my ex and by the church, you know, just depending on how well behaved this woman was. So my job now, I hope I'm not losing track of where I was at. Oh, okay. Yeah. So there's the husband and then there's the ministry thing. So there's that role. Then with ministry, it turns out like, so the men are, they're the ushers, they're the, preachers, they're any job that is public, they're meant to do. And therefore, their wives have to be a perfect reflection and example as well as an extension of the husband. So that means if you want to have any role in the church, you have to start, you're considered ministry and you have to start following basic rules. You have to wear slacks. You have to wear a dress shirt. You have to wear a tie. If you're female, you have to wear a dress. At best, you can wear really nice slacks. But even back then, slacks were frowned upon. I don't know if that's the case anymore, but dress pants were still frowned upon. It was passable if you were fashionable and looking really nice. But otherwise, as a dress, you had to look like $1 million. Because on top of that, Australia is very fashionable. So I don't know how it was in the US, but in Australia, all the pastors, pastors' wives, people in ministry, everybody was super fashionable, looking really nice, looking like, you know, picture perfect. And I was a 90s grunge kid with giant Jayco jeans. I wore chokers. I wore eyeliner out the wazoo. And secretly loved Rage Against the Machine and things like that, you know?
Secretly, right?
Secretly, because even in Christian church, you're not really supposed to be listening to the radio. They want you listening to Christian music. So I was listening to like Skillet, POD, MXPX, a bunch of punk Christian punk bands and stuff like that. That was who I was. And I've always, and I never felt safe in dresses. So this was hard for me. I did not want to wear a motherfucking dress. But so immediately I was starting to become a problem in the church because I wasn't dressing nice enough on Sundays. And then the other thing, it turns out if you're in ministry and you're, a man's wife, you're required to not only dress nice every service, you have to go to every service and you have to go to morning prayer. I don't know if you remember morning prayer or if y'all still did that out here, but we were still OG days when I was going, and you have to go to morning prayer. If you're in ministry, you have to wake up at 5 a.m., drive all the way across town to the church, and you have to sit there in a room with everybody else and pray out loud. I've since learned that, well, that's a side topic. I can come back to that later if it's important. But the point is everybody's in there praying out loud. Everybody's like, dear God, blah, 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 and you, and I just praying that blah, 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 like everyone in unison out loud. Blah, 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 blah. Sometimes you'd have a quiet time and like people would be in there playing quietly, but everybody's supposed to be praying. So even if you're quiet, everybody's like, blah, 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 praying, you know. I don't even remember what bullshit we used to sit there and pray, but God fucking damn, everybody always had to pray like this. Like everything was urgent, 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 urgent. Save every last goddamn sinner on the goddamn planet, blah, 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 blah. That kind of energy. You know? So 5 a.m., you have to go to every service. So you're waking up at 5 fucking damn in the morning. Every fucking day of the week, there are no days off. You go to church, you go to Sunday school at 9 a.m. You go to service at 10 or whatever. You hang around and you socialize. And by the way, you're supposed to be serving. So you're supposed to be greeting everybody, being friendly, being social. You're on a mission. You're not going there to church to enjoy yourself. You have a fucking job. Mm-hmm. The service happens.
Let me just say this job is free. They don't pay you.
Oh, they don't pay you. They don't pay you. This is ministry. The only payment you will ever get is you. Oh, by the way, you're not allowed to leave your church ever unless, so not only was I'm like facing this doom of never being able to see my family hardly, I can't leave this goddamn town or this church or anything, because you are loyal to your local congregation unless your husband gets selected to become a pastor and get sent out to create a new baby church. So now you have this perfect machine for spitting out pastors and starting up baby churches all over the world. That's how it's been able to multiply from the 70s. So originally Potter's House used to be part of Foursquare Church. And in the 70s, they split from Foursquare over some disagreement. And that was when Wayman Mitchell started the Potter's House and this whole cult and this whole method. So that's how come from the 70s to, this was the early 2000s, there was already churches, thousands of them everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my only chance of escape was behaving, because maybe my husband would be able to go start his own church. So yes, you have to go to all the services. And then this is my favorite, with dripping with sarcasm. At the end of every service is the altar call. And this is, they always want to make sure everybody gets saved and invites Jesus into their heart. And if you're allowing any bullshit in your life, that you walk up and you repent as well. So this is a call for salvation and a call for any Christians to sort their shit out. So everyone in ministry, whether the sermon spoke to you or not, has to go to the altar, has to get down on their knees, and has to put on a motherfucking performance like their soul just got touched by God and that they're sinners and they gotta repent. And I was stuck, because if I didn't behave, I had an asshole husband. If I didn't behave, I had an asshole church, and I would be getting in trouble. And also at the beginning, there was also a mixture of, like, this stuff gets in your head and you're like, I don't want to go to hell. I don't want to fuck up. I don't want to ruin things. I want people to be saved. I want everyone to be happy. I want everyone to go to heaven. So you start like just having this immense, like, it just takes over all your thinking. And you do go to it thinking, oh, this is, even though I don't feel like going to the altar today, it does still connect to helping other people feel like they can go up to the front and, you know, do whatever they need to do, their own business with God. So there's that. Then you socialize, then you go out to lunch, which that was usually fun. Then you go home. And here's another secret little thing that nobody ever tells you. Sundays in between service is nap time, which is fuck time. That's when everybody has sex. It's not a rule. It's just a quietly understood thing amongst all the ministry couples, because their whole life at this goddamn church, that's the only time they have to take a nap and get some. Then everybody gets up and goes back to church. Oh, by the way, I forgot this. So not only is there morning prayer every day, but before every Sunday morning service, there's prayer. And before every evening service, there's prayer. So you even got to go before the service to go sit down for half an hour, 45 minutes, and pretend like you're doing Bible study or praying. Then the service starts again, and it's exactly like the morning. You worship, you have a sermon, and you go to the altar. So that's Sunday. So then you have Monday, Tuesday, which you're going to morning prayers, and then you have church on Wednesday night. Wednesday night, you get just as dressed up, you go to prayer, you go to service, you do the altar call, you come home. Then you have Thursday, Friday. Here comes Saturday. It is compulsory to go to outreach. These motherfuckers weren't just doing this for fun and because they really believe in it. Half of them do. Some of them do. Some of them legit do. And initially I did as well. You go put on a performance. So all those psychos that you see with their little hand-painted signs, you know, repent, Jesus, blah, blah, blah. That was us. And I hated it. It was so embarrassing, but you had to do it. So I had to take my turn to stand up there and shout out to the crowds walking past me and give them my testimony, my story, blah, blah, blah. And by the way, if you don't accept Jesus, you're going to fucking go to hell. you know, I had to say all that stuff, not the F word, of course. I'm embellishing because it was annoying as hell. So I was into it at first, you know, because I was like, yeah, you know, we're helping people, blah, 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 blah. But after a while, the exhaustion starts to kick in. And oh, by the way, every single month you had revival. At least once a month, you had a visiting pastor from another church come. So now you're going morning prayers. I got to get out of morning prayer, by the way, because I got married and he had kids. So I got to stay home with the kids because I had to get them ready for school. So I got out of it, but he still had to go. So if you don't meet all this criteria, you're never going to get to become a pastor and get the fuck out and go do anything. That's your only career. You have no career. Your career is church. Every single man, the only men that are allowed to have careers are the ones who are going to stay in the church forever and bring tons of money into the tithe bucket. Otherwise, your job is to become a pastor. And if you're a woman, your job is to keep him sexed, take your turn cleaning the church on a Sunday, and take your turn doing nursery. I literally felt like I had been not without my daughter. Like, I don't know. I'm probably showing my age here, but Not Without My Daughter is an old movie with,
yeah, I know what you're,
anyway,
yeah.
If you know Not Without My Daughter, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So then you have revival once a month. So you're going to Sunday morning prayers, Sunday morning Bible school, Sunday service, home, fuck, prayers, service. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, back at it. Thursday, you're continuing because now you have a revival pastor here. So now you go to church Wednesday night. You go to church Thursday night. You go to church Friday night. You go to outreach in the morning, you go to church Saturday night, and then you have the revival pastor doing his shit Sunday morning, Sunday night. So if you're working, you're exhausted because you're working 5 days a week, and then you're like, all your spare time is spent doing church stuff. And if you're a stay-at-home mom, which I was a part-time, I worked part-time for a long time, like while the kids were at school and stuff, I would still work, but you're still taking care of kids. You know, you still, every stay-at-home mom will tell you, you don't sit around eating bonbons, you know, watching TV, and especially not here because you are not allowed to have TVs.
Right.
So here's the other layer. So not only are you exhausted all the time, like just, it's this constant barrage. And all the sermons are never sweet. And this is something I started to realize after a while. So initially, I couldn't pick apart their sermons. They were never saying anything technically wrong. But when you only ever talk about something like in this perspective, so yes, this is talking about the Bible, but I feel like it's anything. If you only ever focus on one thing, and that's the only thing you ever teach and you ever talk about, it just becomes horribly imbalanced. Horribly imbalanced. And they only ever talked about the hard shit. That's all they ever preached. In Christianity, they call it preaching the meat of the word. And that's all they ever did. So you're exhausted. Then you have other secret Bible studies. So now you have Bible studies you have to go to that's only for ministry. You're only allowed to go if you're going to become a pastor. So this is not even the usher. This is not... you know, other general, you know, you're not, I think if you're a worship leader, you're already being groomed to become a pastor. So basically most upper level ministry, you had to go to this. And these are Bible studies that are to train you to become a pastor. And at these ones, this is where they would tell you all these secret little, you know, rules, but they wouldn't tell you, oh, here's a secret rule. They would just tell you, you have to go to the altar call or you're not going to become a pastor. You have to do this or you're not going to blah, blah, blah. You have to do this because of blah, 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 blah. That's where it would happen. So nothing's on paper. It's just verbally enforced all the time.
Right.
Now, there's rules. Not only on how you dress. Oh, by the way, tank tops, showing too much skin, all that type of shit. Just, we have a lot of that here in America. There isn't a lot of that out there in Australia, but here in America, you have like a lot of people with like, you know, I love Mennonites and I love the Amish, but similar to that, you know, a lot of Christianity, like here in America, you see people with like, they never cut their hair. They wear long denim skirts, kind of like that, but make it fashionable. It's how you dress, but then also you're not allowed to, they would always try to discourage you from having social media. Like they would always mock MySpace, Facebook, YouTube. You're not allowed to watch movies. You're not allowed to watch TV. You're not allowed to have a TV in your home and you're not allowed to go to the movies. I love TV and movies. I particularly loved movies. I wasn't always a TV person, but I loved movies. And so what people were starting to do is they would get DVDs and they would watch movies on the CD-ROM on their computer. And it started getting to the point where if you went to someone's house and they had a computer with a CD-ROM, there were some people would have stickers on it. I'd be like, oh, no, we don't actually use it. Like, don't worry. We don't watch movies on it. Like, it was that bad. But I still wanted to go to the movies. So sometimes I would go and then I would get tattertailed on. And
yeah, because there's definitely people who watch.
And so I would be scared. I would like try to hustle from the parking lot to get into the cinema and hope to God I didn't bump into someone at the movies also trying to sneak a movie. Because that would sometimes happen. You know, so I was like starting to over time realize how crazy this was, because I totally bought into the no TV thing initially. But then I just started to realize, okay, this is really isolating you. Life is boring. Life sucks. This is all you're ever doing. So I would start ordering stuff from the US and I would watch movies on my little computer all the time. And I would still go to the movies. And sometimes I would, and to go to the video store to rent DVDs, I would wait until like 11 p.m. just before they close. So that way, like nobody would be out and about and I could sneak in and out and rent movies. Cause you guys got to remember, this is before streaming. This is before any of that. And then Australia doesn't have unlimited internet like you do here. So you do have to kind of watch yourself. Oh, maybe it's changed since I was there, but
yeah.
So you have all this going on and I just eventually started to realize this shit is crazy. I would go into the bathroom at church and look at myself in the bathroom and I literally felt like this. Like I was looking fine. My hair was done. I was dressed. But like the way I saw myself in the mirror was tense and with like fangs. Because I would just get to the point where I would go to the church and I would literally turn myself into stone. I would clench my teeth. And this just made me have a reputation for having a bad attitude. So not only was I going to the movies, bringing movies into the house. Eventually my ex realized he was never going to be selected to be a pastor. So he caved in and we got a TV in the house and an Xbox. So then that was starting to be a problem with everybody. And I don't know how to explain it. There'd just be this negative feedback on you constantly all the time. Oh, as it was, the pastor would make fun of you from the stage. He wouldn't say your name, but he would passive aggressively say everything about you, but your name. So everyone in the church knew that you were being shamed in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. For whether it was because I wasn't doing my dishes well enough. That one, I got called out from the stage many times for those, because the pastor would come to the house. But yeah, I just started getting to the stage where to survive, I just had to clench my physical body. And I would just spend the whole time blocking it out. And when we would go to outreach, I would do just enough to look like I was doing shit, and then I would try to like walk far enough away that nobody could see that I wasn't doing anything. And then I quit dressing properly. Like I would wear jeans to church. People reported me to the pastor for my jeans, and I've gotten called into the pastor's office for what I was wearing. Pastor, at this point, one of the pastors changed, and another time I got sat down in my own house to be lectured for what I'm wearing. So at the time, I didn't realize how disrespectful this was, but I was just in a rage. So I was like, fine, I'm gonna wear a Christian burqa. And I would wear this dress thing that was kind of see-through, and it was a little bit fashionable at the time, but I would wear it over a tank top and jeans. So you could see I was wearing a tank top and jeans, but I was technically wearing a dress. Mm-hmm. And I wore the same dress, the same tank top, the same jeans, the same shoes every single service. And I just started wearing the same thing every single time. So I was like, technically, I'm in a dress. Technically, I'm covered up. You know, just stuff like that is how I started to, but like things like I was having breakdowns. I think one time, this was early on, this was probably what started to turn. It was like probably 3 years in, I got called into the pastor's office. Oh, my ex, tattletailed to the pastor on me for something that has to do with money. I don't even know what it was. And this is what was so infuriating to me. Like, I got in trouble for, I don't know, not tithing or something. I don't know. But I was just being so battered by the church and by my ex at this point. And this is only 3 years of marriage in, 2 years, 3 years in. I sat down in the pastor's office and immediately broke down crying. He didn't even get a word in. I think the door got shut. It was just me and him in the office. And I don't mean like, oh, I break down crying. I mean, I literally broke down and I started crying uncontrollably, like sobbing, crying uncontrollably, probably for like an hour until the church was closing and everyone was gone. I was still, this is gonna make me sad thinking about it. I was still sobbing uncontrollably the whole drive to a family member's house that we were going to. I was crying uncontrollably. I got there and she was like, what's the matter? I was still crying uncontrollably. So that she laid me down in her room. And I probably lay there for about another hour, just crying uncontrollable. And she tried to ask me, what's the matter? And I tried answering her, but I was crying so hard. It was just like she couldn't understand a single word I was saying. So that's to kind of give an example of like the kind of breakdown. Like I'm talking like literal breakdown. This is like an exhaustion. And you spend every waking hour thinking, am I sending my kids to hell? Because, you know, I'm not doing XYZ right. Or because it's just like this constant strain on your mind. And it's such a constant barrage. You almost don't have a second to think your own thoughts.
Right. It's psychological and emotional abuse, what you're describing, right? But we don't have the words for it in that place. So everything you're sharing is like psychological and emotional abuse. And what happens is a lot of people will think, well, I don't see a lot of physical abuse, so I don't think that it's big, like a big issue. But what happens is the physical is just the same as emotional abuse, psychological abuse. And that's what causes a lot of survivors who are escaping emotional and psychological verbal abuse of toxic environments, relationships, and a lot of times we'll have survivors that will not come forward because they feel, well, I wasn't physically touched or abused, so my story is not as big as this other person's. And so we have a lot of the survivors that will stay in the shadows. And I can attest to some of the psychological and emotional abuse that was so strong. But because it wasn't physical, then we feel like we can't share our stories. And so like your story on the outside for somebody coming, like looking out, like look from the outside in and like, well, I don't see a lot of physical abuse, so I don't understand. But like your breakdown was an extreme example of the psychological, emotional spiritual abuse, verbal abuse that took place. And it reached a peak and then it exploded. And then you would go back and fill it up again and then peak and explode. And because there was no way out of the prison, we had to continue to just continue up that peak. And so I want to share what is the Potter's House cult. It also known as the Door. Okay. So this is their Potter's House. It's called the Potter's House CFM cult, the Door. And according to their own website, this church began in 1970. So this began with the late Wayman Mitchell in 73 when he first he launched out a baby cult, baby church. According to their website, in 1978 was actually one of the first couples that they planted a baby church in Australia. Okay, so to date, according to their website, they have over 3,000 cults, churches throughout the whole U.S. and throughout the world. So like your story, you're the face of this taste of just a taste of what goes on in different levels. And so for a lot of people that don't know, that may not know, I was also in the CFM cult, the Potter's House in the U.S. in Texas, in a small town called Amarillo, Texas. And in that small little town, almost everything that you can describe in Australia was going on personally with me during the years of 2002 to 2018. In that phase here, things that you're describing, I can describe was going on in the same place. And I didn't know you. I didn't even know about Australia having a cult at that point. And similar situation, similar, you know, psychological abuse in every way, torment. You know, I've been asked, what are some of the horrific things that you've gone through inside of this place? And the only thing I can describe it as, even though it wasn't physical, was waterboarding, getting your face stuck under the water and basically submitting to whatever, anything that they told you, you had to dress, do, where you could go, where you couldn't go, as extreme as possible. You were going to stay under the water and be brainwashed into believing that you had to do it. Yeah. So,
and they were mean about it too, because you would get called Jezebel, rebel, witch. They would lecture you, talk down at you, and then everybody would judge you. And you're not making this up. I promise you, you're not making it up. But people would look at you and they would give you those judgmental looks, those subtle comments, those mini lectures, that kind of stuff all the time. So now you're in a situation where they're actively separating you from your inner voice. So you're made to ignore your body, ignore your needs, ignore your own intuition. You're being forced on external dependence. You're externally depending on a church. You're externally depending on your spouse. And then there's all the verbal and psychological abuse that they use to enforce it.
Right.
And also the promise of this or the threat of taking it away.
Yes, definitely. And so I like to say that there are so many people out there that haven't shared their stories yet that are, I get people that find me. I don't even know how, people that I don't even know. And I will get messages in my DMs of like, hey, you don't know me, but I was part of this cult. Some of them are still in it. Some of them are trying to leave. And I feel like they find me when they need it, but they do not understand what, like, the process of knowing that, wait a minute, you can leave? Like, I don't have to stay here. Like, I can literally walk out the door anytime, because that's what happens. A lot of people are like, wait a minute, how can somebody fall into this cult and then stay in it for over a decade?
Or for
me, I stayed for almost 20 years.
Yeah, well, because, and see, in my case too, it's worse, or it's not worse, it's in a perfect example. So let's just take Christianity. I was already trained biblically in Christianity. So in the church, according to Christianity, they were already wrong. And I would sit there and be like, that's theologically incorrect. Context is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. So even though I knew stuff was wrong, they had already just do such a mind fuck on you that you literally become it is genuinely brainwashing, and you don't even realize it. And you think you're not brainwashed because you see the bullshit, but you see the bullshit and they've still done such a number on you that you still feel like you have to stay and there's no option to go out. But also because if you leave, everyone's going to reject you. You've already been isolated from your family for so long. You haven't had any time to develop your friends, any time to develop yourself, any time to develop your life. So you have actually just been forced to become so isolated and so dependent on this church, even if you don't think you're dependent on it. They've done that to you. And so then you don't even realize what being normal is anymore.
Exactly. And it's so sad, you know? And so I want to go into how can someone go into a cult? And so this is actually off managementissues.com. This talks about how some people are sucked into a cult. And so they state that a cult is basically, cults can fulfill human search for meaning. They offer clear and absolute answers to difficult questions, such as the meaning of life, good versus evil, etc. In addition, cults can feed the need of structure and order. And some people join cults simply out of just loneliness and a desire to be a part of something bigger than themselves. So what would you feel like, when did you finally realize and accept that you had been in a cult for over a decade?
Yeah. So it was partially through starting to mentally break down everything they were saying and doing. I'm like, this is wrong. It doesn't line up with the Bible, blah, 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 blah. Because I still had to clear my, you know, decondition and de-brainwash myself from just the Christianity aspect. I was hearing stories of other people whose lives were being destroyed just like mine. And that's honestly there's two things, but that's honestly one of the biggest ones. I was like, how could I possibly be involved with something that's actively spreading more churches and actively spreading all this? I didn't have the word at the time, trauma. But I just was constantly hearing stories of traumatized people. Like there was a girl who, my friend in the church whose mom was never good enough. By the way, the mom, I found out years later, she would do cocaine at another church friend's house to cope, and that the church friend just let her do it so that she would at least be safe at her house doing it. That, and then her daughter, who I was friends with off and on, depending on if I was allowed to be friends with her, she eventually left the church before I did. And she told me of another girl that she just met, who was in the church, but they were in the Philippines. And same thing, like they had separated her from her family. She was forced to do all the same stuff we were, but she also broke down. And the way she broke down, like one of the really shocking signs that you saw was her baby would be walking around all day with the same diaper all day long, soaked. And she would be in the backyard just cutting the grass with scissors just all day. And like, that's how, you know, people are just finally breaking down to that point. And I was having constant severe panic attacks. I always felt on the brink of that exact stage. Until I started basically, and I eventually realized my only way out was to rebel and become so bad I'd get kicked out. So I started doing that. But then eventually I worked through all of that. It was just stages of working through stuff. First being really angry, and then realizing, I can't be involved with this anymore. And I started to, somehow I managed to convince my ex to let me and the boys go to a regular church. I think because he knew there was no way he was ever going to become a pastor. And it is because he was a narcissist, and they all knew it. And it was just to the point where, like, I don't know, it just wasn't going to work out. So that was a saving grace for me, because I had like a way to baby step out. But then eventually I realized that I was dealing with a narcissist, and I had to axe that as well. So I left the church. I left him. I realized if I stayed, I was literally going to die. And I had to go. And the reason I knew it was a cult was because of what it was doing to people. But also the, and this is one that academically anyone can really kind of click. Maybe your experience wasn't this bad or your breakdown wasn't this bad, but here's how you know it's a cult. Number one, all the rules and all the love bombing. Oh yeah, there's the annual conference that you have to go to as well if you want to be in ministry. That's a whole nother conversation. But anyway, so the pastor of the Potter's House in Australia, the lead pastor. So every church has a mother church, and that mother church has a mother church all the way till you get to the head mother church of the whole country. That pastor of the mother church that led the whole country of Australia was actually really great. And he was starting to shift some things in a positive direction. So that was one of the reasons I stayed hanging on. But the U.S. branch, which is the ultimate head of Australia, caught wind that he wasn't really doing things quite right. So they came and they kicked him out, and they made every single pastor of every single church, especially the head churches, come in and renounce the previous pastor and do fealty to the Potter's House, Wayman Mitchell.
Right.
And if you didn't, and if you so much as said, but wait, what did he do wrong? He didn't do anything wrong. Scripturally, the people that were like, but scripturally, blah, 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 they'd be like, you're out, fired. Out, 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 out. Anyone who wasn't an immediate yes man, an immediate renouncing that pastor and literally taking the knee and bowing to this headship of the U.S. with Wayman Mitchell, got fired. Doesn't matter if they'd been pastors their whole lives, they didn't have a pension, this was supposed to be their whole career, they were out. And they just systematically went down at through every single pastor, and every church that they kicked the pastor out, they took whoever was the most agreeable yes man, and they, even if that man had never pastored before, nothing, they would place them as the head pastor of these mother churches. And so anytime anyone was like, hey, where's the scriptural this and where's the foundational that, like, was always like, no, 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 no. It boils down to control and to functioning in a certain way. And if you take everything that they do, even if it's not on the internet, because none of this is on the internet, everything that they do, and read up on what makes up a cult and what makes up controlling, like, they would literally do all those things.
Right.
And that was when I realized, because even to the last minute, I was like, no, it's just a legalistic church, but they were making some good changes. There's still hope. There's still hope. There's still hope. There's still hope. But once, and I actually can't remember all the details because I was actually quite traumatized. So I actually don't remember a lot of things, but I do remember reading through all the message boards of everybody communicating with each other and telling each other what was going on in all their churches and all the pastors and everything, like everything was blowing up. And so that's where a lot of the truth of the behind the scenes came out. And that's where I was like, oh, it's a cult.
Damn. Yeah. And so I like how you were saying some of the traits of a cult, because that's what I want to end this with, is
okay,
some of the traits that someone that is listening or watches this, or anybody that they may know somebody that might perhaps potentially be in a cult. Mm-hmm. This is some of the traits from Dr. Steve Eichel.
Okay.
Checklist online. And I'm going to name some of them, and then you can kind of be like, yeah, or was this part of the of your own experience? And again, this could be applied to not only like a cult or a high demand center place, environments could be a toxic relationship, toxic workplace. This does not have to be specifically a cult. So,
okay.
And let me just say that Steve Eichel is a psychologist primarily focuses on destructive cults, mind control, brainwashing, and deprogramming. And then you can find him on his website at drsteveeichel.com.
Okay.
But this checklist here. So here's just some traits. The group is focused on living on a leader, and this leader is all the members basically have to focus on this leader, excessively zealous and unquestioning commitment. And you just said some of that in your story.
Mm-hmm.
Check. The group is preoccupied with bringing in new members, also known as converting.
24/7. Obsessed.
Okay. The group is preoccupied with making money.
Yep. Yep. That's a whole nother conversation we could get into. And the Wayman Mitchell aspect. I could tell you stuff about that. Yes.
Right. You were brainwashed and groomed to believe that you had to give money to God, also known as the cult leader.
Yep. It's to the church.
Yep. Questioning, doubt, and are discouraged and even punished.
Ooh, heavily. Don't go on the internet. Don't read stuff. All other churches are wrong. So that's why you can't leave and go to another church, because nobody's living up to God the way we're living up to God. Everybody's wrong. Everybody's bad. Don't go anywhere. Don't talk to anyone. That was literally the messages all the time.
Okay. And mind-numbing techniques. So such as meditation, chanting, speaking in tongues, like this routine of excessive routine.
Mm-hmm. Prayer. Going every morning to prayer and before every service. You have to visualize a room full of like 30, 40 people, however many people, shouting at the same time. That was prayer. Or being quiet and mumbling, but like, like people, you knew everybody was listening and then you had to prove you were praying. And so it would be like, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, and out loud, everybody like, hello, and then everybody, not that they're praying in tongues, I'm making that noise, but that's because I can't even think of what bullshit we used to pray. And make them da 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 da, and God, your victory, and blah blah blah. And everybody would be doing this shit with their hands, like, and it's just like,
and you know, and somebody watching it, like, I'm sure there's people that have, because I've had messages from people that are like, hey, like, I walked into one of these places, but I right away knew something was wrong and I walked out. And so that's what I'm saying, is like, a lot of people can be like, how the hell did you stay? When first of all, you telling me a story like that of these people shouting shit like that, I would have been out of there that fast. But you,
this is before the service. This is for only the real dedicated people.
Exactly. And by that time, for those that didn't walk out, we're using this as a coping mechanism, because they're telling us that this is the way to be saved and healed and rescued from hell. And, you know, and from your story, we're pre-programmed and groomed even before entering a cult about this shit. And so when you walk in there and they're telling you the stuff that you've already been social conditioned with, probably even in childhood, you're not going to question this. So for those that already go in pre-groomed, they're going to eat it very, very quickly. And for those that just want to go in and make this world a better place, you just want to
make it a better place. And they always target communities and areas and people who don't necessarily have a career, who aren't doing as great. They target people that they know that coming to this church will give them a purpose, will give them a career path, will give them a higher moral calling. That's how, I honestly don't know how they get some people with money to stay, but.
Right, yeah.
But for the most part, they target people that they know are kind of like how the military targets low-income families, because they know that these kids feel like they don't have a lot of options and that they can see a way out of their neighborhood or into college through the military. And so recruiters always focus on certain kinds of areas, and the churches were very much like this. This was one of their tactics.
Right. So let's see. Another trait for a cult would be the leadership dictates how you should think, act, feel. Examples: get permission from leaders to date, change jobs, get married.
Oh, yeah.
They'll tell you what clothes to wear, where to live, how to discipline your children. The next one is, again, claiming a special exalted status for the leader or the cult leaders. The group having a us versus them mentality. Mm-hmm. The group's leader not accountable to any authorities. Mm-hmm. The group teaching or implying that if you leave, there's some, you know, there's a punishment. The leadership induces guilt feelings in members in order to control them. Mm-hmm. They encourage you to cut ties with family, friends, give up personal goals, activities that were of interest before joining the group, and you're expected to devote excessive amounts to the group, and you're encouraged to or required to only talk to group members. Mm-hmm. And so those are just some of the traits. And for me, it was all of them. I mean, we gave so much money. We gave so much time, sleepless nights and sleepless days, just giving for the purpose of making the world a better place. You don't actually see it as abuse. You don't even know the word abuse. And personally, for me, that was one of the things that got me to wake up was, I think this is abuse. And, you know, mm-hmm. I remember leaving the cult in 2018 and having somebody say, hey, they got rid of this cult leader, so how about you come back? Because now we have a better cult leader. And I'll never forget, I didn't even really know abuse at that point, that I had been abused. But I said, specifically told this person that had reached out to me, and I said, you know what? It doesn't matter that they changed a cult leader. The point is that he was abusive, and like nobody did anything. Like nobody said, like, okay, now you're going to bring in somebody else. Like, but what about the abuse that took place? Like, what, where is the accountability on that? So nobody was recognizing it as abuse. So that was one of the things I knew too. Like, oh, that's abuse. Mm-hmm. So that was a big word, you know, to actually believe and feel and know. And then you have to realize, like, shit, if I was abused, I got so much trauma that they gave to me, and now I have to go heal it, and it sucks. But I just want to let you know how brave you are for even speaking out. Like, this is your first time, and just sharing it is healing in itself. I'll never forget when I first shared mine, and just throwing out all those bits and pieces that for some people, they'll look at your story and be like, what the fuck?
I feel like I only touched the surface too.
Oh, right. You know? There's so much that's in the dark.
Yeah. And I almost feel like we could have a whole separate conversation talking about the deprogramming process afterwards and then the healing process.
Right. So you're definitely going to have to come back on.
I would love to.
Yes. So this is just like you said, just the surface, like not even it much, like people on the outside, like really there could be, but for those that have been in this cult specifically, I'll tell you right now, because I know for 100%, anybody that watches this, that has been in this cult, they're going to hear your story. And like everything you said is like big. It isn't small to them because they went through it. They felt it too. Yeah. So when they listen to your story, they're going to be like, for me, this is what I felt. I was like, you give words to those that don't know how to put it into words, because they're walking away from a toxic, this place that for some have been in there since they were born, that they don't know how to put it into words. They don't know how to say what you just said. Like, these people are all praying at the same time and they're shouting. Like, for you to grow up in that, or for you to be in that for so many years, you think that's normal. But when you walk out of that and you realize that that wasn't normal, that's actually a tactic used to keep you brainwashed and in this routine, so you won't know that it's not normal.
Yeah.
Then you're like, what do I do? Like, to others that have never experienced it, that can be hard. I think that's why a lot of times people won't share their stories, because they're like, they're not going to get it.
There's also an element of embarrassment, because I felt for myself too. So not only did the church, you know, do its part to keep you isolated, but even if you were being weird, and even if not having a TV, as much as you coached yourself into all the reasons why you shouldn't have a TV is a good reason, and you go tell people are so polite that even though they're like, wow, you're batshit crazy, or wow, that's fucked up, or That's weird. Like, having not watched all my reasons I gave for not having a TV, people would just be polite and be like, oh, yeah, oh, that's great. Oh, wow, about real positive. But then eventually I realized that's not what people really thought. People were like, whoa, that's weird. That is a sign of a cult. That is,
right,
you know? And so there's also this process of later realizing, like, there is an element of embarrassment, like, oh my God, this whole time people knew I was in a cult, or people could tell that this was weird, but they were just too nice to say it to my face. And that was another layer of why sometimes you don't realize and why you don't leave, is because there's nobody giving you, you're in an echo chamber all the time, and there aren't any fresh voices to tell you, like, hey, that's weird.
Yeah.
You know, that's not normal, or that's not as ideal and as you think. And so I feel like for me, it was a part of my process too. It was like, it was embarrassing to think I was in a cult, or it was hard, not embarrassing. It was just hard to realize, like, I felt like I had egg on my face, you know? So
it's so sad. It's understandable, but we're going to have you back, and this will be like part one.
Okay. Right? Cause there's part two is the cool part. This is the, oh my.
So we'll do part two soon. And when we do part two, we'll go into the healing and the things that you have filled that helped you, so that anybody that is going to stay on this series that we're going to have here, okay, on what they can do. But I would say definitely Dr. Steve Eichel, he is an amazing place to start. Look him up online. He's amazing. Yeah. He does podcasts on the cults, any kind of cult, any kind of environment that keeps you stuck like that. So he's really amazing. And he's also also works one-on-one with people. You can find him online as well. So yeah, definitely. We're going to do part two. We're going to bring back. Thank you so much for sharing all this amazing stuff. Just, I feel like for you, this part one was more of just like giving out validation that even the small stuff was either big. Abuse, psychologically abuse, emotional abuse, spiritual abuse, mental abuse, like all of this meant something. So for anybody that's watching it and hears your story, this could be a time where they just sit there and be like, oh my gosh. Like, this could be an awakening for those that, if they're in the cult, it could show that even these small little things actually cause damage when you walk away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to have some links as well for all this good stuff. You're going to have your link. I'm going to, and all of that. And so thank you all so much for watching. Yeah. And
follow my story on Instagram. I made a fresh new Instagram. I kind of finally felt like I did a proper healing. And so I started a whole fresh new one. It's the Heather W on Instagram. If you want to join me and see like the rising side.
Yay.
I would love to have community there if you want to join me.
Yes. And if I'm able to add all those links on here, since it's alive, I don't know if I can, but I'll try to see if I'll be able to throw in some links there for your Instagram. And then some other like support services, just in case somebody is watching and they feel like they could be in a cult, or they know somebody who might possibly be in a cult, they can send them some of the support links. Okay.
That would be great.
So next time we'll do part two. So please follow us.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Heather. It was amazing.
No problem.